Blog Talk Radio.
We welcome you to Missing Pages of History. Missing Pages of History is a show that is dedicated to the upliftment of oppressed communities and underserved communities. We seek to continue to travel down the road of filling in our missing pages of history. That is, those pages that have been omitted from the history book as it relates to underserved people and its community contribution to humanity. So when we talk about history, we want to be inclusive of all people's history and contributions. On that note, we're kids and welcome to Missing Pages of History. And today's theme is we're going to talk about what's going on in your world. That's right, we'd like to have an open discussion, and we'd like to hear views and comments from you today on what's going on in your world. But before we get to our theme tonight, Mr. Pages of History would like to just give you a few updates on upcoming activities and events and how you can participate with Missing Pages of History. We'd like to invite all of our friends, supporters, and people who have interest in helping us to be our community is to come and support some of the following activities that is going on under the banner of Missing Pages of History. Those activities are on June the 25th. There will be a second quarterly annual raffle drawing taking place on WCIM 1450 radio station in Richmond, Virginia at 1 p.m. For all individuals who haven't purchased our tickets yet, you still have time. Please do so by contacting one of our members or calling us at 804-726-3217. Also, there's ongoing spring-summer drive, T-shirt, and cap drive. If you haven't purchased your Missing Pages of History cap and T-shirt, please do so. You can do that by going to our website or as well, call one of the MPH members. You can go to our website at www.mphinc.org or call one of the members or give us a call at 804-726-3217. For those unaware, we are now opening up the process where we are seeking new members to come help build and join Missing Pages of History. And you have an interest, we have a sign-up section where you can join our organization by going to our website. We welcome you to come and join us. This upcoming fall, we're going to have some dynamic shows that can take place on a live TV program, which is coming up this fall in the month of September, so stay tuned. We'll share more information on that. So those are just some brief announcements on some of our activities and events coming up. And like I stated earlier, if you want to know more, please check out our website. That's www.mphinc.org. We also would like to acknowledge our brother Emmanuel, who normally is our contributor analyst, and you normally hear his voice and his presentation on various issues and topics, but he is under the weather. We hope that he have a speedy recovery, so we hope that he get well. He's under the weather. To our listening audience. Also, we'd like to wish everybody, all the fathers throughout the world, Happy Father's Day tomorrow. And for those who have fathers, we'd like to tell you that you should appreciate your fathers. They're nothing like a father. And we'd like to thank all the fathers for their contribution to humanity and being a father and doing what fathers do. So we'd like to wish all the fathers on behalf of Missing Pages of History, Happy Father's Day, which will be tomorrow. June 19, 2016. So those are our brief announcements for today. What we're going to do right now, we have a little section of we can call giving you something to think about. And that was a real interesting article that was reported. And this article was titled "Stock Report: More Americans Killed by Police Since 9/11 Than Soldiers Killed in the War." And discuss these articles and others. We have a contributor and analyst with us today for Missing Pages, Susie. Susie, we'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History.
Good afternoon. In reference to being that tomorrow is Father's Day, I think the shock report it'll give you something to think about just with the statistics, because of the fact of a speech was given on Memorial Day at Arlington National Cemetery by the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff's Marine Corps, General Joseph Dunford, where he prayed for the 40 million Americans who served in the military since the Revolutionary War. He also noted that 5,000 soldiers had been tragically killed in military action beyond the U.S. border since America's War on Terror was launched after 9/11. And one reason, thousands of these families grieved daily for their fallen loved ones, there was a lot of fathers lost because of the war machine that sent them at an early grave, which showed no sign of slowing. These fallen military men and women, we were told, died fighting for our freedom, The terrorists hate our freedom. This is what George Bush famously said after 9/11. And if this was true, they certainly have little reason to hate us, as freedom in America has plummeted since that fateful September day. For the last 15 years, America has fallen across the board in deuces rating the world's country's level of freedom. Americans are under constant surveillance, our every move under a microscope by government, protecting us from terrorists. We are under the constant threat of violence from the state of possessing a plant or having a taillight out or simply walking down the street. Americans are constantly paranoid of those blue and red lights popping up in their rearview mirror that almost end in extortion or could well end with a visit to a hospital, being locked up in a cage or worse. In the land of the free, police kill more people in just 1 month this year than the United Kingdom has in the entire 20th century. In the land of the free, police kill more than 70 times the rate of other first world nations. In the land of the free, we are told to fear the terrorists, but U.S. kills 58 times more people than all terrorist activity against U.S. citizens since 9/11. These are just some examples. And prior to May of 2013, there was no independent recording authority on how many citizens were killed by cops. However, the FBI loosely estimated that the number to be around 500 citizens annually. That's a lot of young men and women lost. Using the most recent numbers from 2013 to the present and remaining conservative by using the FBI's loosely contrived number of 500 per year before then, the death toll reaches a whopping 8,296. And to end, just by giving you the example, in the land of the free, citizens are killed by public servants at nearly twice the rate of soldiers deployed to war. But these people are criminals, right? They deserve to be killed, right? No. It's just a whole lot of senseless killings that's done by people that's supposed to uphold and protect the citizens. And that's all I have to say.
Well, you see, I find the article really interesting. I'm going to give people something to think about. Like always, to your listening audience, you're free to call in to give your input, your feedback on what's going on in your world, as well as the articles that we're going to discuss today by calling in at 818-337-0016, 818-337-0016, or you can go to our Mississippi History chat line and type in your questions. You know, I'd like to send you a thing of this whole article, Susie. And please, if those want to call in, make sure you hit 1 and hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. Susie, I think one of probably the central question is for me for this article is, like they stated, since 9/11, more people have been killed by the official police force than going to all of these so-called terrorist wars that have taken place since 9/11. So the question becomes, you know, where should we be most fearful? Where should we be more fearful? Fearful in terms of the terrorist attacks or from official government institutions such as the police force? I think that's the question that has been raised. That's something I think that people must look at and think about. Give us something to think about. Right now, we can stop for a few minutes. We have a few callers who maybe would like to respond to this article. We're going to take caller 3330. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. What's going on in your world, and would you like to respond to this article?
My response to this article is that it's clear institutional dysfunction at play. Because if you have this kind of phenomenon where those who, in word, are supposed to protect and serve, but they're responsible for a high number of body counts, something needs to be looked at, and there's some things that need to change. And something that people have to understand is that one of the issues when you look at those that are supposed to protect and serve, remember there's an old adage that goes, possession is 9/10 of the law, and they're supposed to enforce the law as a matter of protecting possession. But we have to realize it's only a very few that have those possessions. And I think that plays a big role in terms of the scenario that we see in regards to what this article conveys.
Okay, caller, we're going to put you on hold. We'll bring you back at the next segment, but we're going to put you on hold. We'd like to thank you for your comment. Hey, we have someone else who has called in. Let's take this caller. Caller 6029. Welcome to Mrs. Pages of History. Your question or comment?
Yeah, my question is this. You know, one of the things is that when you look at the wholesale killing of the citizens, it seems to me on a fundamental level, both legally and moralistically, it seems to me that there should be some outcry from government institutions, government representatives, in terms of this kind of egregious treatment of his own citizens. The mere fact that they refuse to indict those individuals, those institutions which carry out these mass killings, suggests that they're complicitous or that, in fact, they support these killings. And I would wonder, when we start thinking about the whole context in terms of justifying these killings, I think we cannot disconnect that from the reality in terms of how the economic system works. One of the things we talk about, a fundamental restructuring of the global economic system. So you got a situation where increasingly people don't have jobs. People certainly don't have jobs with meaningful wages. People don't have access to affordable housing. People don't have access to quality schools, or they don't have access to food. All those things human beings need, which means that if those things are not forthcoming, then you create a populace of people who are discontented, who are extremely upset about the current state of arrangements. So it seems to me that there's a systemic need in terms of a lot of leaders in the society to go along with the mass killings because of certain interests that are very, very powerful. I think this is the thing that we have to be very, very concerned about as citizens in this country. Thank you.
All right, Carl, I'd like to thank you for your contribution. We'll put you on hold and bring you back later if you choose to, or on this set of topics. We thank you. Susie, in terms of hearing some of the comments from our listening audience, are there any response you'd like to respond back to?
The only thing, basically, the callers, they gave a good idea of what's really going on and what you do need to really look into, especially you would think the governing body here would override and take a look at why these shootings are killing, especially with our police doing it. And we have an actual situation in Richmond, Virginia, where there's a black policeman on trial for shooting a guy, and it was stated by witnesses that they actually had their hands up, but then the young man took and reached down. He was in the police girlfriend's car, but it just so happened he went to trial and they deadlocked. So therefore, instead of what they did was now they're going to hold the proceedings in July the 19th. The thing of it is, this police, he was told, according to what the witnesses say, he was totally out of line and he should be held accountable, but I just can't understand why they would be dreadlocked. Some think he did and some think he won't, according to what the witnesses say. But that's just one example of a whole lot of examples that's going on. And he just, thank goodness he's one that's going to be held accountable for what he did. But that's all.
Okay, to our listening audience, you should listen to the Voice of Missing Pages of History. Today we are discussing what's going on in your world. We have chosen a few articles that reflects what's going on in our world. We'd like to hear from you. What's going on in your world? You can call in at 818-337-0016. What I'd like to do is take an article that I saw earlier that was really interesting. And I think it reflects not only what's going on in our world, but particularly what's going on in the African youth, in the world of African youth, as it relates to the continuation of the fulfillment of these pipelines in prison. And this is seen to be one of the many examples of how they are planning on filling up this pipeline. And let me just share some points of issues as it relates to the article. It was an article that was written by CC. It was posted on April 28th, 2016, under the publishing paper Earl Hustler 411. It stated that, or titled that, 16-year-old white girl texts nude picture of herself to 17-year-old black boy. He sends one back, and now he's being charged with child pornography. It started out, it says that LaVon Allen is a 17-year-old standout, three sports student athlete at Parkway High School in South Bowser City in Louisiana. An award-winning wrestler, football, and basketball player, LaVon is beloved at school and in the community. He's never been in trouble with the law a day in his life until now. LaVon did what millions of kids in America are doing. He exchanged naked text messages with a 16-year-old classmate. First, she sent LaVon a nude video, and then he sent her one in return. Call it gross, but a recent study found that 54% of kids under the age of 18 had done so far. Parents may hate it, but when it's consensual, it's definitely safer than in person or in personal intercourse. But LaVon lives in the Deep South. He's black, and it appears his biggest mistake wasn't doing what the majority of American teens have done. His biggest mistake was so with a white girl. Her parents called the police when they discovered what was happening, of course. They arrested LaVon, and he was charged with contributing to delinquency of a juvenile and possession of child pornography for the video he still had on his phone. Yes, she's 16, he's 17. Yes, she sent him a video first. Yes, this was consensual. Yes, they attended the same high school together. Yes, this is a bogus symptom of mass criminalization of black folks in the new Jim Crow. I'll stop right there. Give me your take on that, Susan. What did you make of the article?
Well, the thing I make of it, I know each state has its own different laws regarding certain things, but my only point is that they both were minors. Now, if you going to hold one accountable, you need to hold the other, because basically, according to what they claimed that this young boy Lombard did, she was just as guilty as he was. So I can't understand, because like I said, they were both minors, and they both should be disciplined or at least talked to, and hopefully he's able to get out of the situation, but I'm not sure what the laws are in Louisiana.
You know, in this article, it says that in Louisiana, the law states that anyone under the age of 17 found to be sexing any person of any age can be charged with a misdemeanor. It's only widely prosecuted. It's not widely prosecuted. If a 17-year-old, even if they are in high school together, does the very same thing with a 16-year-old, they can be charged with child pornography. Now, the law lacks the nuance it deserves and ultimately criminalizing common youth misbehavior between peers. Now, say actually, like earlier said, it's a misdemeanor, but they really plan on charging them for a serious issue. But the question I raised, the same thing that you raised, is why isn't that the young lady should be culpable as well? And again, it seems to become a tool of choice in terms of how the legal system is using these tools or choices to incarcerate and incriminate young African people in this country. But this is just the reality of one of the things going on in the world. The question is how to respond to it. And then, on that note, I will go to caller 3330 in response to this particular article. Caller 3330, welcome back to Mr. Pages. Your response to this article.
Well, the thing we have to realize is that there's a precedent for these type of scenarios happening. And one recent example in popular media, the focal point of Tyler Perry's Dazed Little Girl was that the main character, Monty, who was working as a mechanic, was once one of the most promising athletes in his particular region. But there was a case where he had consensual relations with a woman. The woman accused him of doing something he didn't do. And next thing you know, his whole reputation was ruined. And that's what we're seeing with this young man that had a very promising future. His whole reputation is going to be ruined because there's going to be a stigma about him just because of the charge being on his record. Doesn't matter if he's convicted or not, just the fact that he has that charge is something that's very humiliating and will make it very difficult in regards to him pursuing a successful professional future when people do the background check and find out about this particular situation.
Okay, we take a caller. Let's go to caller 6029. Your response to this situation, caller 6029.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, there is a misnomer that people think that the law is equitable. I think clearly, aside from the issue of class, we also have the issue in terms of race. Now, one of the things is that when you look at a situation like this, where you would think that given the fact that he was 17, she was 16, that given this kind of event, that there would be some type of conciliatory process by which, you know, the family to get together in terms of resolving it as opposed to listening to a level of a criminal case. So I think there are some hidden motives in terms of the motivation of law enforcement in terms of doing it. And as a previous caller alluded to, one of the things is that by doing so, you damage this young man for the rest of his life. And unfortunately, in a society, there's been a long history of young African males, you know, who are doing well academic in school, who are doing well, you know, athletically in school as well as academically, who find themselves in trouble with the law. And clearly, it appears that there are those who are motivated by, you know, desire to make sure that these brilliant young people never get to a situation where they actually capitalize on their intellect or their athletic prowess in terms of making millions of dollars. So I think, unfortunately, this kind of thing is all too prevalent in society, and I think that it's going to take mass movements and people around the country to, you know, to articulate an end to this kind of appalling treatment of young people, you know, throughout the country. Thanks.
Let me take a call. You know, in making the transition to our final article for today, what's going on in the world, and we'd like to get a response to. One of the things in terms of how laws are implemented and how they are used as a tool has a direct link to the type of individuals who are put in a position who are given the authority to implement these particular laws. If they come with a mindset that is very racist and very prejudiced towards certain segments of the community, then it will be reflected in terms of the use of these laws as a tool against certain segments of the community. For example, there's an article that was titled "Top LA County Sheriff Officials Send Emails Mocking Muslims, Black, Latino, and Women." This was in the Los Angeles Times, and this article was written as relates to a top U.S. Los Angeles County Sheriff Department official for emails with jokes containing derogatory stereotypes of Muslims, Blacks, Latinos, women, and others from his work account during his previous job with the Burbank Police Department, according to City Records. Tom Angel, who is sheriff and Madonna's chief of staff, sent the emails in 2012 and 2013 when he was number two police chief in Burbank. Hyde's reform department, reeling from allegations of police brutality as well as racism and sexual harassment, were in his rank. I took my biology exam last Friday to see one of the four emails which were obtained under the state public record law. I was asked to name two things commonly found in cells. Apparently, blacks and Mexicans were not the correct answer. So, in essence, this article is talking about this particular former police sheriff deputy. He was sending emails as one giving some responsibility to govern a department. He was sending racist emails to some of his employees. And what does that say about people who are in positions of authority who comes with a certain mindset of not viewing the same people as equal and just? And when these issues are exposed, one of the contradictions I have in this article is he really was not punished in no way for doing this. So, Susie, what do you make of this article?
I think it's ridiculous because, first of all, this guy was doing these emails apparently from the job's computer. Now, you're not supposed to do certain things through the computer. And why wasn't the computer being monitored anyway for this kind of thing, just to, so you wouldn't have this kind of problem to deal with? So it makes me think that the actual police place in itself, what kind of mentality do they have toward Mexicans, black, and other people of color? So, and then the fact that they chose, really, they didn't even discipline this guy. This happened in 2013 up to the present day, because he even made a phone call to somebody with a joke that was inappropriate. So apparently it's the mentality we need to get rid of the chief and that whole structure, because apparently this is something that they feel really isn't an issue because they carry the same mentality that this individual did.
If you critique his prejudices or his racism, because he had the power to implement his ideas and his feelings. He seemed to hate people, Africans and Africans. He seemed to hate people with a different religion, Muslims. He even seemed to hate women. That seemed like a recipe of being pro Donald Trump. So maybe we can see why we have such a rise of a Donald Trump in the society, because he's a reflection of people in the societies in key positions throughout this country. Given the fact that I made a statement, we'd like to get a last response from our listening audience. We'll start out this time with caller 6029. Your response to this article and this issue of authorities coming with prejudices and how they may impact on people of color and various underserved communities.
Probably more importantly, I think one of the problems is that you have to ask yourself the question, how is it that people with that mindset, with those kind of values, how is it that they become police officers in the first place? I think to a large extent, you're absolutely correct. Talk about the mindset being pervasive and existing throughout all segments of society, I think you're absolutely correct. I think this question in terms of racism was never adequately being addressed, because those in power don't want it to be addressed. It continues to be an issue. So I think that until we get to the roots of what racism is really all about, which is essentially insecurity and ignorance, until we get to a situation where we can address racism, then we'll continue to have these kind of problems, you know, throughout the police force, throughout the country. Thank you.
1 minute less, call 3330. You'll find a source of comment on this particular topic.
Well, I've done prior research, and one of the things I noticed about this particular region of California is that at one point in time, they had a policy where they were inviting Southern cops to come and work in California that had these kind of attitudes. So yet again, you see a case where there was a previous precedent for this kind of institutional oppression to continue. So it's not nothing new to California when you look at how the Rodney King situation was handled, and it's just a continuation, except for now they've gone from being B cops to being able to be the ones to make the decision. which is a very dangerous scenario.
We thank our listening participants and our listening viewers today for supporting Missing Pages of History. Remember, Missing Pages of History is a biweekly program. It comes on every other Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can see us, and we'd like to share with you information and issues that are germane to our underserved communities. And we must continue to strive to fill in our missing pages. In closing, Susie, I'd like to give you a few minutes to make some final thoughts, and then we'll make our final thoughts for the day. Any final thoughts for today, Susie? Your closing remarks.
Okay, I'd like to thank our listeners and our viewers that called in, and we're still wishing all the fathers out there a happy Father's Day. And I say, may you have a happy Father's Day, and may you walk in peace, that you're not confronted by some of these, I'm going to call them, bad individuals. Thank you.
Okay. We'd like to thank Susie, who is one of Miss Bay History contributors, and also historians as well. And we'd like to thank you for listening to Missing Pages of History. We'd like to remind you that our next program will be July the 2nd at 1 p.m., same time, same place. Also remind you that we have an upcoming raffle drawing next week on WCLM, June the 25th. Again, if you haven't purchased your ticket, please do so. If you haven't got your cap, order your cap and your T-shirt for MPH, please go to our website and do so, or contact one of our members. Like always, we're open for new membership. We encourage you to come and join us. Let's help us be our community and make it become more positive and more vibrant and more energetic and more self-sufficient. Until next time, I'd like to thank you for listening to Missing Pages of History, and let's continue to fill in those missing pages. Until next time, we will go forward ever, backwards ever. This has been Missing Pages of History. We thank you for listening.